Well, good. Let's see, afternoon, morning, evening. As I said in the early show, if you're just tuning in, it does appear after I looked at the past month or 2 months that Monday webinars are a little less popular in terms of attendance. So I am going to be moving all future Monday webinars to a better time slot in the week. And you'll see that. And I'll make an update for everybody. Well, this is a webinar that we do probably every year or close to every year because it is not only good to look at some of the important aspects of protecting our freelance businesses, but it's also a time for us to reflect and think on our own business if we are doing everything we can to protect our business and to provide the best kind of peace of mind for us. So this webinar today, it really is about you, the business owner. Whether you have clients or not, however you run your business, this is not really about clients. This is not about somebody who might be upset at you. This is about making sure that you protect yourself, protect your brain, protect whatever is needed. And as I said in the pre-show, I only realized after I put the slides together that the default slide by Zoho uses this little square, which is, I guess, Nationwide Insurance. So this is in no way a promotion for Nationwide Insurance. This is basically just Zoho's default background logo for this presentation. All right, so let's dive into this protecting your business. And we will start with contracts. I put this as one of the first things to deal with because whether you've been in business for a long time or you are just getting started trying to do your freelance development, we may feel like I'm gung-ho about making sure contracts are signed, but there are going to be times where sometimes you feel, oh, it'll just be easier if, we understand what's going on, blah, blah, blah. So contracts are very important because it does several things. One, it sets and maintains expectations. So a contract, I mean, think about contracts we sign every day. You probably sign a contract for your cellular phone. The expectation is that you will get unlimited minutes. You will have X number of bandwidth. You can text message. There's a contract that sets expectations and maintains those, that if you give them money, they will give you this. The same is true for freelance contracts. Setting or having a contract in existence allows you to maintain expectations both from your client. They don't know your business as well as you know your business. And so if there's a contract, they can understand what is expected of them as a client. Plus, as my second one here, it protects the memory. How many of you in your history of running a freelance web development company, has a client ever come back to you and said, I thought you said this, or I thought we were going this direction. I thought you were going to build this. Memory is a real danger because they may have said something. Maybe they agreed to the contract and then they called you on the phone thinking what they had said, would be implemented. And then they come back and say, well, why didn't you do this? It protects your memory because, as the third thing says, it's always easier to reference, quote, the contract. Never reference your own memory when dealing with clients because it's going to be a he said, she said. Well, no, you misheard me. I said this. So if you can reference the contract, the agreement, the milestone payment system. You can reference that. It also removes emotion. Because when a client is feeling like, oh, my memory says this, or the client is feeling like they didn't get what they wanted, or that you're not doing what they want, emotion enters the picture. And no matter how you respond to the client, they're going to be emotional, or they're going to respond emotionally, or many will. And so if you reference the contract, you are not bringing up yourself to an emotional conversation. Because we're keeping it legal. We're keeping it, the contract says this. It's not, well, I told you that we were not going to be building this. You know, you get somebody who said, well, you told me we would create these multiple images slideshow on the front page. If we respond, no, I told you that we were not going to be doing that. You've injected yourself into the conversation. It becomes emotional. It becomes, they didn't listen. They didn't do. If you say, as per the contract that we agreed to, the contract states, this is what the front page looks like. And on the addendum page where we're signing off on designs, this was the agreed upon statement. Because this way, we can trust the contract, not the client. How many of you have had the client? A lot of times it's like family members or acquaintances who literally say, ah, trust me, I'll get you that money. Just can you launch it right now? Can you launch the site? Because, you know, I'm about ready to go off on vacation and I want the site to be up. Trust me, I'll pay you. Trust the client, trust the contract, not the client. Now, we've done other webinars about contracts and everything, but I just wanted a quick rundown of some of the key things. If you want to go into more details about everything that needs to be in a contract, go watch some of the older contract webinars that we have in the library. But these are the things, and again, use these bullet points to review your own contract. You don't have to go rewatch an entire webinar. Just pull up your current contract and say, hey, do we cover scope of work? What is going to be done? Do we cover time frames? Do we cover deadlines? Do we cover payment terms? Ownership. Now, in today's webinar, we're going to be talking about a few of these additional things. Changes, edits, drafts, changes to the contract, how is that done, termination, and what about other legal disclaimers? Your contract with a client needs to have all these things. It is not just a, hey, Bob's coming over, I'm going to write a little thing that says, hey, we're going to build a website for Bob, and we'll deliver it on this day, and Bob's going to sign it. You need a little bit more than that. All right. Now let's get into I've got a few slides here on some very specific things that will help you not only legally but emotionally in terms of how clients will respond. Dates are easier to agree to instead of ranges. What I mean to say with this is, how many of you have ever said to a client, this will take 2 weeks. Maybe it's just an off the cuff. They're asking, how long would it take us to do this? Maybe you don't have the contract yet. And so you just say, hey, it'll be 2 weeks. Do you know what the client is hearing? Now, they might be hearing exactly what your brain is telling you, that, okay, I'm meeting with the client on Saturday. And you're thinking, you know, 2 weeks, it's approximate that if I start work on Monday on it, and basically it'll go to the next Monday. Well, what if the client thinks, okay, well, 2 weeks is, you know, it's approximate, basically by next Wednesday we'll have it done. Now, sometimes utilizing a calendar mockup can help a client understand the different parts of a milestone. So this was a new one. I attended a webinar that someone was using this concept, and I like the idea where you can actually map out, you know, the squared calendar system, and you're highlighting, okay, this week we're going to be focusing on icon and logo design, and then we are going to be working on the implementation into the code, and then we will go through and make sure all our images are in place, and then over these next few weeks. It doesn't mean you have to stick to it, but a client can then see that, hey, here's what we were working. Now, the best thing, some of you don't work with dates, some of you do work with ranges. But what I would say, think about flex options. So, Ben, your concept of a 6-week turnaround. You could have, say, oh, it'll be about 6 weeks where, you know, we need to have like 4 weekly meetings where we will agree to logo, design approval, those kind of the back and forth time, but the project will wrap up by March 18th. Part of the reason, if you put a hard deadline into the wrap-up of a milestone, the wrap-up of a contract, you can finish earlier. But if you have a hard date, it means that if the client is pushing back or resisting or not getting you stuff, you have something to go back on and say, listen, we do have this. We do have a 3 weekly meetings that we've got to get in order for us to get feedback and us to redo the logo or, you know, get the color scheme just right. And we need to get it done by March 18th. It gives a hard deadline both for the client as well as giving them an expectation approximately when something's going to end. If they push beyond it, that's where we have things in our contract was, well, if the client doesn't do certain things, then either there's a penalty phase, maybe there is an extension that is required for them to push beyond a certain time. The one thing I'm trying to be aware of, and some of you may not have experienced this yet, I don't want you to be, quote, on the hook for a client for the next 6 months because they keep pushing it out. If they're going to keep pushing out the time, they need to be paying you for access to you or putting their contract on the back burner and saying, all right, we will come back to this when your business is slowed down a bit so that we can actually have some of the conversations we need to have. So consider these. You may or may not feel like using dates is what you need, but dates can be easier to understand. That's true. And again, some of your businesses, I'm looking at the chat. If you're missing the wpstudio.com/chat, you want to jump over there. But if the client is not providing replies or content, then having to meet a date on my side by rushing. Now, the thing is, I guess what I'm saying with these dates, have a hard date for something. If a client, part of those dates are deadline dates that the client has to get you stuff by because you can't move forward without that stuff. It's not saying that, okay, well, we're going to wrap up the project on March 18th. And if the client gives me everything on March 17th, well, they've missed several input days or content. But yes, it's absolutely... The dates are easy to agree with I think clients can understand dates better than ranges. continuation clause. And so maybe this will talk about something here. This is one of the ones that, yes, we've talked about this type of thing, but I've come to craft the wording a little bit different, and it's a continuation clause that needs to be in your contract. Some of you already may have that, but you may like the continuation clause better than what is you currently call it. Some of you may be calling this the revisions. How do I handle revisions? But the continuation clause protects against the constant tweaking requests. So we finish this. Oh, can you just, make it a little redder? Or, oh, can you increase the font size of everything? Sure. All those things may be easy to do, but we don't want to get into that continuation clause. Now, some of you also may already have in your contract X number of revisions prior to charging at the X dollar per hour rate. But this continuation clause or follow-up clause, follow-up or follow-on clause, needs to be in the initial contract and conversation. Because if the client knows beforehand that if I keep asking for changes above and beyond the agreed upon mock-up, the agreed upon project, it's going to cost me. So you can provide a certain number of continuation development, continuation clauses, but let the clients know it needs to be, you're not just going to do this forever for as part of the contract. Part of this is protecting your business, protecting your time, because you pitched the contract, the development project of the website. You pitched it at a certain price because you felt it would take X number of hours, I'd be able to do this or do that. If they keep pushing changes, you're now earning less and the value of your service goes down. So we want to make sure that the client understands beforehand that, hey, it's going to cost X number of dollars. Deliverable ownership. The next few slides are really going to be important to protect your business from some lawsuits. And that is, who owns the IP? The intellectual property. At what point does the intellectual property ownership transfer? If it transfers at all. These include final deliverables. Who actually owns the website? Final images, drafts, mock-ups. Don't forget, you have probably done a lot of creatives as part of the project. Does the client get everything after that? Or are you basically licensing? We're going to have another slide about this. Are you licensing this type of stuff to the client? So this has to be worked out as part of the contract because, I have seen it and some of you have told me this. You built a site for a client and you've got all sorts of information. Then the client comes to you and says, oh yeah, can you also give me all those other logo concepts that you had created? Because you're not going to use them, right? Well, if we didn't agree to that, the other thing is maybe you're only granting because you're developing at a certain price, hey, they are licensing the images that you create. They don't get the originals. They don't get the Photoshop files with all the layers so that they can mess around with it. Now, you can include those at a higher price that you can all get. You can get the Photoshop, the layered stuff, the full images, the photos that you took. You can include those in a contract at a certain price. And we'll talk a little bit more about creatives here in just a moment. I think it's going to be down in the copyright protection that we're going to talk a little bit more about creatives. So I'll leave that till those slides here in just a moment. Privacy policy. The next basically two slides are about what you must cover in privacy policies and terms of services. This is going to be a quick overview. Use this as a time to kind of look at your own privacy policy. Make sure you hit on all the top things that you need to hit on. And if you want to learn more about the more in-depth how to build your own privacy policy, we do have that webinar. Just type in privacy policy in the library or terms of service, and I think there's at least two webinars on that. But these are the things that you need to cover. If you are not covering these things, you may need to go in and add some aspects to your privacy policy. Eligibility to access your programs and serve. Who are you allowing to access this? That's part of the privacy policy. How you collect information. How do you receive consent? How to withdraw consent? How can somebody come to your website and say, hey, can you remove me from your mail list? Can you remove my IP address from your tracking? How do you handle payment data storage? And it can be just simply all payments are handled through third-party off-site things. Or maybe you do collect offline payments. You need to make sure you have done that. Disclosure practices. What happens if your website is hacked? Are you required to disclose to all current members that the website got hacked? How do you disclose? Is it simply that you're just updating a disclosure document on the website? What's going on with that? Security of personal information. How are you protecting people's email addresses? Are things encrypted? What's going on? How is a user able to access and update and correct their personal information? What third-party services are integrated into your website? Is it Google Analytics? Do you have Facebook Pixel connected to the website? And whenever there are changes to the privacy policy, how do you notify people of that, as well as how do people get in touch with you? These are all things that need to be in a privacy policy to protect your business, especially, you know, with some of the things happening in European countries, requirements, cracking down other states here in the United States that says, hey, we need you to make sure that you are protecting the privacy of your users. The same is true for terms of services. Terms of service needs to basically, by using this website, you are agreeing to something. You are agreeing to the privacy policy. You are agreeing to the eligibility of accessing our terms or our website. How user information and password protection is done. What is happening with the billing and membership on your site? Now, membership doesn't have to have a charge. Membership could simply be people who are signing up for your account so they can leave comments. What's the intellectual property? Disclaimers, limitations of liability, that just because you come to this website does not mean that if you follow what was written on this website, you will be safe from lawsuits. You know, all those limitations of liability. Governing law, jurisdiction, well, what if somebody tries to sue you? Well, if you are a member of this site, jurisdiction is going to be through a mediator at this. You cannot go through a legal court case. I mean, all those things need to be in a terms of service. So I'd encourage you, if for whatever reason some of these are not in your current terms of service, go back and watch our terms of service webinar and our privacy policy webinar. Government interaction. That's right. No matter where we are in the world, whatever country we are, we need to make sure that we have registered our business properly. Here in the United States, a lot of times that's LLC, some type of corporation, some type of incorporation. That's just the start of it. Do you need a business license? Everything from your county to your state to your nation, several different types of businesses need certain types of business licenses. Most places in the United States, this is simply filling out a form. Some of them, you may not even have to pay for a license. It's just letting the county, letting the state know that you are, quote, a business in their jurisdiction. And then, do you need specific professional insurance? These are all governmental interactions, because sometimes when you register a certain business property or have a license, you must also carry insurance. Now, within the web development world, there are certain types of insurance that are very specific to what we do. The professional liability insurance is, for web developers, is slightly different, because we have to have this thing called errors and omissions. These are things that if we are building a site for Subway, and we misprint a price of a certain Subway special, Subway can't turn around and sue us, or they could, but our professional liability insurance would cover us because there was an error on the website. And yes, there is a liability insurance here, but a lot of that is covered in, because it's basically WP Studio has zero liability because it's simply open source code. Now, there's other things. How many of you meet with clients face-to-face, whether it's in an office place, whether it's in Starbucks, whether it's somewhere else? How many of you have ever met a client? Because you might want to consider general liability insurance, and I don't know how it is in Germany, but here in the States, if I'm the one who initiates the meeting, so I say, please meet me at this location, there is an expectation that I am providing a safe environment for them to meet. And if they come out of their house and for whatever reason they never leave their house, but they have to leave their house because I have said, in order to do this contract, I have to meet you face to face, and they slip and fall on the ice, they could attempt, now they may not have any luck with it, but they could attempt to sue me because of they were meeting for professional reasons and liability issues. Some of you may be looking at meeting in co-working places. Does your co-working place require you to have commercial property insurance? Because what if your client comes in and your client breaks the big 300-foot plasma screen, and then they come after you because it was your client? And then the other thing is cyber liability insurance. This is fairly new. If you deal with some higher level clients that actually have or have given you a larger contract, talk to your insurance agent or somebody who sells insurance about cyber liability. Well, what if somebody hacks your site and steals all sorts of stuff? Can somebody turn around and sue you? It's entirely possible that your professional liability insurance would not cover you because that specific insurance company only covers cyber liability, or that's a rider that gets to add it. So I would encourage you that if it's been a while since you, if you do have insurance, maybe you have car insurance. Maybe you have life insurance. Maybe you have something else. Call that insurance agent because you can sometimes get deals if you're bundling multiple different types of insurance together. Ask them and say, you know, I've got this business. I've got two or three clients that, you know, I want to make sure we're protected. What do you guys offer for freelance liability insurance, cyber liability? What does that entail? What does it cover? And what's the cost? Just make sure that these are things that you hope you never have to use it, but it helps if you have it. So, yes, Stacy, you are exactly right. So with the cyber liabilities, it's also sometimes if you have payment gateways, they require every 6 months, they will check or validate all your server protections. Otherwise, they'll shut down your terminal or your payment processing gateway until you have fixed it. Exactly like PCI compliance. So cyber liability, they will test, they will look. Maybe they will require you to pay a certain outside agency to test your server just to make sure there aren't any just open doors for people to go in. But it's always a good idea to dive into at least the information to see if it is something that you need or you don't need. All right, client termination. We hammered on this a long time ago, but this is just a reminder. Make sure there is a clause somewhere, a paragraph somewhere in that contract that the termination clause will prevent you from being left high and dry by a client, give you an escape hatch if you're in an unhealthy client relationship. You get to decide how much notice will be given for the contract to be canceled by either side. You get to decide beforehand what the cost will be for a contract termination. Now, Ben, if you have SSL and you're using Stripe, should not be an issue. But here's one of the things Stripe will do. It'll check and make sure you're using the latest version number of the API. And it's possible cyber liability will not cover you if you're using an older API. Those are all types of things that might exist for that. So make sure you have a way to terminate your client or they have a way to terminate you. And also, is there a cost to it? Do they forfeit all the money that they have already paid into milestones? What happens with intellectual property ownership if you terminate a client? That's a big thing that we forget about. So what happens? It's a 5-milestone project. You've gotten through 3 of them and the client is just so much hassle going forward that you're going to just say, all right, we're going to terminate at this point. And maybe if you terminate it, there's not a penalty fee. If the client terminates, there is a penalty fee. But maybe if the client terminates, you maintain all intellectual property. If you terminate, they get all completed intellectual property without the originals, all that type of stuff. Make sure you have thought through IP ownership, payments, fees, who can do it, how much notice must they give you. I mean, here's the other one. What if they have a big milestone payment coming up and you send them the reminder 3 days prior about the milestone payment that is due, and then they follow that up and saying, oh, we're going to terminate, and so we're going to get out of this. Well, if you had said you must give us 7 days to terminate, Well, this way, by you giving them the 3-day notice that there's another milestone payment coming due, they still owe you that because they terminate 7 days from the time they let you know. This also will protect, and again, they'll pay a fee in order to terminate. Now, you may not be able to collect on the full milestone payment, but at least you'll get the fee for the termination. And again, if it's on the contract, and let's say they had an $8,000 milestone payment and the termination fee is $1,000. Well, by them terminating and not paying that last milestone, you could take them to small claims court for $9,000. If they don't pay, that's a large enough chunk that a lawyer would work with you on that. Copyright protection. Well, Jesse, the other thing is it's fairly easy to win in small claims court. It's the collection aspect. But if you have a large enough judgment against the client, sometimes you can sell that to collection agencies, and therefore, yes, they're buying pennies on the dollar, but at least you'll make some money. So copyright protection. Here's something to remember. In the United States, you own copyright protections as a creative. The moment you create something, it's copyrighted. That in many court cases, you can now prove if you can have the dates, the information, the files that are dated on your computer, that if the code originates, the design originates from you, that is protected work. You don't have to go file a trademark with the US government in order to do that. Creatives, the moment you create it, it's protected. So basically, most freelance web developers are licensing your creatives. And when I say creatives, it's the end result of what you design. It could be the code. It could be the JavaScript that you write. It could be the Photoshop logo that you create. So you are licensing the creative to the client. So you maintain ownership. Unless the client is paying for the rights to the creative. So that's for the stuff that you create. And again, that probably needs to be understood in the contract about the copyrights, the ownership of copyright, who has it, what is the cost to transfer it, what is the cost to license it. And then make sure you are collecting all licensing documentation for any non-personal creatives. What that would be is if you use stock photos, make sure you have licensing for it. If you are using other third-party plugins, a lot of times you may not need to go get that stuff, but you might, like, you don't have to issue it to each client, but you might want to download the license. If you are using something that is not GPL, if you're using GPL, you can simply just grab any GPL license, keep that on file, and say all of these plugins and tools fall under the GPL license, and that's the licensing. If you are using something else, you might need to have a copy of that license. All right, business continuity. What happens if you are unable to attend to the business? Sickness, injury, you took a cruise through Asia and you're stuck on a cruise ship outside of Tokyo because there's 64 or 150 other cruise members who have coronavirus and you can't get off the ship. I think they said there's something like 112 Americans who are on that ship that is basically quarantined, not allowed to get off, and it will be at least another 2 or 3 weeks. What happens to you? What happens to your business if you are unable to attend to this? Who has access to your control documentation? Do you have an ICE folder? And I'll explain the control and ICE folder. Logins, passwords, summary of your business, outline of business liabilities. What this would be is, do you have a, whether it's electronic or it's actually a physical file that contains many of the logins or passwords, what your business does, where to find information, what's the outline of business liabilities, what type of, okay, these are the fees that come out. This server costs this. It comes out from this bank account. These domains come out of this bank account. We owe on the new computer system that we just bought going through this credit card. Do you have that information? And then do you have something that has, here's all my current clients. Here's how I contact them. And here's how I bill them. What about server access, domain access, DNS access, email access, site access? Or if you become out of touch for whatever reason, did your business just end? Did every one of your clients basically get stuck in limbo? Or yes, if the client terminated you, what happens to the business? There's two levels that I consider business continuity. One is the control documentation. And that's basically saying, if for whatever reason, a friend, a spouse, or something else, you needed them to, let's just say you're stuck in an area in a small town during a snowstorm, and you need somebody to update something, is there a way for them to follow a step one, step two, step three to issue something? My ICE folder is actually through Dashlane because I have all the stuff about the business sitting in Dashlane. It's encrypted. And basically, if I don't log in to Dashlane, which basically means I haven't opened my computer or my phone. So if I have my phone with me, it's not doing anything. If I don't log in, it sends the notification, and my wife can actually send a request, and her account, email account is already authorized. And if I have not accessed anything, it will grant her full access to my Dashlane. So every single one of the passwords, then there's an encrypted documentation folder. There's a whole bunch of files. One of them is server stuff. One of them is usernames and IP addresses and logins and where do I go for this? So whether you use, I mean, I think LastPass also has that. 1Password also has that type of, basically it's you're granting someone access to full usage if you cannot access it. And basically, you have to set that up beforehand. Now, it can also be somebody who maybe you don't have family members that could even handle that. Maybe there's another person who does similar work, and they're willing to, quote, be your emergency access, you're willing to be theirs. And here's the other thing. If they're trying to hack into your stuff to steal all your clients, this using LastPass or Dashlane or whatever, if they request access, It will also send me an email saying this person has requested access. If you do not reply to this email within, or if you do not approve it within 24 hours, they will be granted access. Well, if somebody's trying to get access, I can see that and I can just say, oh, no, I still have access. I don't need you to do that. So one of the easiest ways for technology-related companies is to use something like your password manager to set up an emergency ICE folder. If something happened, somebody would be able to access how to log into your bank account, how to pay the bills, how to do that stuff. So this could be something that you also look at doing. It also sometimes makes it simple if you need some help with certain things and you're in the hospital, you're still alert, conscious, but it's an easier way if you already have things set up in LastPass where you can just go grant access to someone who can update the site or make a post or simply go pay and make sure all your clients' domains don't expire. I mean, that's a big one. Like, there's nothing worse than, okay, you're down for the count, and then all of a sudden your client's sites start falling off the internet because we didn't renew their domain names. But that's a great idea, Ben. Just have a, we don't have to give each other access, but just say, these are the things that I have put together in a folder. Am I missing something? So, business continuity. But that's all about protecting your business, because it's all about setting expectations with clients and putting those boundaries together. That protects your business. So if the client knows what is expected, what you are going to do, what they need to do, we can cut issues off at the head because we've managed the expectations. If we're registering our company, getting the licenses that we need, protecting the copyright, making sure that we have the documentation we need as business owners, that goes in a folder. It can always be pulled out when we need it. And then your ability to make sure your business can continue if you are down for the count for a bit. I mean, here's the other thing. I know some of you probably have a lot of domain names. Some of you have a bunch of domain names. Some of you may have a bunch of servers. Some of you may have software, or maybe you have bought other tools and it's on your computer. Those are assets that if you, and again, this is not, I'm not trying to be too morbid, but let's say one of us passes. Those are assets that people we leave behind can use. Because maybe it's one of those ones that, hey, they could sell the company because it comes with a portfolio of 249 domain names. It comes with a portfolio of 78 clients. It's one of those ones that you never know that all of a sudden, if you pass, there could be other businesses that are willing to buy your development thing because it comes with this whole package. And if you have if your person who you've left behind has the ability to at least turn information over or to hire somebody else to, quote, liquidate all your assets that were part of your business, it's something you can leave behind. But if you don't, and it just goes away, all the work you've been doing just goes to the ether because everything expires, nothing's there to pay the bills, and all the work you've done to build clients are gone or hosting or whatever. It can also be a way to, if somebody comes along and, okay, you're hosting 48 different client sites and they're all paying $20 a month. Well, if the people you leave behind or if family members understand that, hey, as long as this hosting is still there until we figure out what to do with it, you know, there's a good $850 a month that will come in. So just keep all of that in mind when you talk about protecting your business. Set it up, set the contracts, the dealing with the government stuff, copyright protections, setting the expectations, and protecting the continuity of your business is what really what it takes to have a successful business here in the freelance world. So the replay will have these slides so you can go through them, kind of evaluate how you're doing. Maybe we can have some more conversations in Slack about making sure that we are covering all the bases. Some of us won't be able to do all these stuff immediately, but just start thinking, all right, I'll work on this month, this next month, this other thing the month after that. Just little bits at a time. All right, well, thanks everybody for hanging out with me on this Monday. For those of you who were able to, this replay will be up as soon as I can. And don't forget, there is another webinar on Wednesday and another one on Thursday. So I will hopefully see you all then. Have a great rest of the Monday and enjoy your week. Take care, everybody.